Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Nate, how was your Christmas?
It was very spectral.
Spectral?
Yeah, I didn't get visited by a... Well, I suppose I did get visited by a procession of phantoms, actually, that taught me life lessons, because we got completely obsessed with BBC sitcom Ghosts.
It's very good.
It's got massive ghostess energy.
It does have massive ghostess energy, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really lovely stuff.
It is. Who's your favourite?
Robin the Caveman.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, it's just my id on the screen. I love him.
Mona. He's great. I love him. Yeah. James, how was your Christmas?
Oh, lovely. Did quite a lot of stuff because I had like a slightly extended holiday. So I've been to the Isle of Wight, got attacked by a goose, built Lego Tallneck, and I finally started painting the Space Marine miniatures I got in January 2023.
Oh, good. So, yeah, I have no follow-up questions.
Yeah. Oh, and I engaged in a multiple city-spanning ruse to replace one of my dad's frying pans without him noticing.
I have some follow-up questions.
Basically, we got my dad a new frying pan for Christmas because his nonstick one's a bit, but not so nonstick anymore. And we used it while we were there to make some like fried bread. But due to my own inadequacies, I failed to notice that the oil was like melting the silicon end of the tongs we were using.
Oh, I bet that's an uncanny smell.
So I was like, I didn't notice this until we'd finished. So I'd unwittingly like infused the bread with tong silicon, and so obviously we had to throw out the bread, but we were also concerned that I'd like infested this new frying pan with what was essentially like macro plastics.
Did you have shit tongs, or did you heat the oil to be hotter than the surface of the sun?
I mean, maybe both. They seem like quite old tongs. I may have like held them a bit too close to the bottom of the pan, maybe. But yeah, in any case, we felt we needed to replace the pan. The thing is, with my dad, he's very like stuck in his ways in a lot of things, and if he knew that we were planning this, he'd be like, oh, no, the pan's fine, I'll just wash it. So we decided that we had to replace the pan, you know, a bit more surreptitiously. As part of our trip to the Isle of Wight, because we were basically going from like my dad's house to the Isle of Wight and then back later, we stopped in Portsmouth, bought like an identical frying pan, kept it with us for two nights, and then took it back. Waited until like he went to the bathroom or something, then swapped the old silicon infested frying pan with like this new one, and he didn't notice.
So I'll be honest, James, I'm probably going to cut that anecdote down.
Can you do a bit of myth busting for me? The
yes.
The non-stick stuff in non-stick pans.
Yeah.
Is it true that it turns into poison if you break it?
I don't know about breaking it. It can if you get it too hot.
Because I always thought that like if you scratched it with a fork or something, the grey wound would be the source of pestilence.
I mean,
Oh, listen, whom among us has not made mashed potato in a non-stick pan with a metal masher and eaten some Teflon? Like,
well, this is it. Maybe you made poison potatoes.
Trace amounts of my insides are bulletproof. That's just how we live life, right? And I forget. Welcome, listener, to this, the New Year episode of Season 2. Maybe we should start Season 3. Fuck it. Of the electronic, the electronic wireless show. I'll decide. You'll know, listener, by how I've numbered this episode, whether it's Season 3 or not. The Electronic Wireless Show podcast, Rock, Paper, Shotguns, PC Gaming podcast, and the only podcast you need, in my opinion. My name is Alice Bell. I'm joined by James Archer, who has had a very eventful Christmas, and Nate. Like you, Nate Crowley, I one day spent, I think 8 hours. Like, I had dinner and then just watched two series of Ghosts.
It's very chuggable, isn't it?
Really is.
And we had, afterwards, we were sort of really fiending for it. And Tally then got obsessed with Horrible Histories purely because it was the same actors. But we ended up like binge watching a children's history program just to get the ghost fixed.
Like taking methadone.
It was very good, though, to be fair. Like,
it is very good. Did you know as well the guy who plays Julian, the MP who died in his pants?
Yes.
So he co-wrote Paddington 2 and Wonka, Willy Wonka, the new Wonka movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because he's good, Tally's favourite by a mile. It's such a family-friendly show, but she's managed to ask us about 100 times why he died with no trousers on. And she thinks he's the coolest guy in the world because of this, and obviously we can't really clarify matters.
No, yeah, true. Anyway, listen, if you haven't watched Ghosts, do, BBC show. We've not got loads of news. It's January, so we haven't got like a big topical thing to discuss this week, although I will point out that the last working day of the year versus Evil was shut down. So hearts go out to them. And also Unity has rung in the new year by firing a bunch of people as well. We've started 2024 how we ended 2023 in terms of layoffs. So that's, you know, depressing. However, much to look forward to, hopefully. So we're going to talk today about the games that we're looking forward to the most. James, I'm going to start with you. Because I can't always pin down your taste, you know. So I'm interested to see what games you're looking forward to this year.
Okay, so probably the biggest one right now is Resistor, which is that indie racing / RPG game where you have these incredibly violent burnout style death races, and then go home to have nice chats with your pit crew. So this is my favorite game that I played at EGX back in the autumn. I really liked how exaggeratedly fast and just physics ignoring the racing is. I think I talked about it in the podcast, actually. You can do, like, attack donuts.
Oh, which, yeah, this sounded well good.
Which just, like, fling enemy cars off into rocks and they explode, which is great fun. I just like how ambitious it is for what I believe is the dev studio's first game. Like, it's a big open world car game combined with all this fully voiced RPG dialogue stuff, and you know, that's a lot of game. With quite a unique concept as far as I'm aware. I'm very interested in that and seeing how it all comes together. There's Tribes 3 Rivals, which I can't really be impartial about this. Like, I want Tribes, like, as a concept to succeed, because I think it's really good, and I'm sad that it's been like 12 years now since the last one, which kind of died a not particularly honorable death, largely due to microtransactions. So yeah, there's this new one, Tribes 2 Rivals, which looks and plays like mostly like Tribes Ascend, the previous one. I've been involved in like a few of the playtests, and it's like it's missing some stuff, definitely. Like it wouldn't surprise me if like the full release was maybe very, very late in 2024, or maybe even in 2025. But I'm sure like you can definitely play it before then, because you could play it at the end of 2023. But I broadly like how it's coming together. It's mainly a case of like adding a couple of things which are missing, like vehicles and maybe some bigger maps, and tweaking some of the balance. It's such a boring topic, like talking about like balance, like damage, weapon damage numbers and projectile speeds and all that garbage, but it does need like a few tweaks there, but I think it can be really, really good. What else?
I didn't peg you as like a tribes person. See, this is what I mean. You're all over the place, James.
I'm sorry, Alice. I think I can
pigeonhole James's taste in one regard, because okay. Tribes is a really good example, actually. Like, he's very passionate about surprisingly massive games that I haven't heard of, and I don't know why, because they're clearly very big and good. So he's like the Mandela effect for me. So I suddenly notice these games all over. Is it the Mandela effect where you notice something once it's been brought up, or is that just recency bias?
No, the Streisand effect is when you don't want people to notice something, so your efforts to stop them noticing it make it more public.
And then there's the Dunning-Kruger effect where you can go into people's dreams and slash them apart. No.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Now, the Mandela effect is when you have a memory of something that never actually happened.
Okay.
And it's named after Nelson Mandela, because I think some woman had a really strong memory of seeing that he'd been released, or that he died or something before he actually had on the news. And my Mandela effect is thinking it's called the Mandela effect, because I was like, why would it be called the Mandela effect? I don't know. Maybe it's the opposite of a Mandela effect, where something exists that you thought didn't.
Maybe it's a Mass Effect. That's just the name of the game. There's nothing there.
That's not a joke.
We're all warming up.
Well, speaking of my eclectic tastes, a couple more are Space Marine 2 and Big City Little Kitty. Which...
See, what's going on? What's going on there?
So in one of them, you are a 10-foot-tall religious extremist who shoots a trillion insects, and in the other, you are a cat who gets scritches. But I've filed them both together in my mind, because at the start of both 2022 and 2023, I've got on record on RPS as saying I'm looking forward to Space Marine 2 and Big City Little Kitty this year, and both times they've been delayed into the following year.
Oh.
Can I blow your mind?
Go yeah. on.
It's because, like, the secret is they're both just two interfaces for the same game.
Pokemon Red and Blue.
You know the trailer for the Pyro in Team Fortress where he thinks everything's flowers?
Yeah.
Like, the people playing the cat game are going to think they're getting scritches, but actually they're tearing down the Southern Polar Fortress in McCrag.
I was wondering how you're going to square that circle. Well done.
That'll be really good, though. Like, you know, an MMO where one side doesn't even know they're in it.
Big
City Little Kitty. It's not like
Big
a,
Kitty
like
Little
a
City would be great. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just like cat minus one, and it's
big shit city.
Anyway, is it sort of like Stray? Is it kind of?
It's not as like dark as Stray. It's you are just like a cute cartoon cat like wandering around a town. Right. But you know that's a pretty cool fantasy.
It is a cool fantasy. And the Space Marine 2 is just Space Marine 2.
It looks pretty standard Space Marine stuff, I suspect.
They've managed to ram a lot of Tyranids onto the screen.
They are, yeah. This is being made by the same people who made the surprisingly, in my opinion, not terrible World War Z game. And that was kind of like the big thing about that game was having these like massive zombie hordes, which were absolutely massive, as in the Brad Pitt film, but also didn't necessarily destroy your computer. And I think Space Marine 2 is kind of like going for the same horde style, shootering.
Yeah, they've done it because you really need to be able to do numbers on screen to have all the right number of gribblies that you need to do Tyranids. All the footage I've seen so far has the exact vibe of trying to get out of a gig from the back right before the last tube. Like, it's just it's crowded, and that's good. That's what futuristic war should be like.
Okay, yeah. anything else, James? Anything else you're looking forward to this year?
Horizon Forbidden West on PC.
Oh, yeah! It's going
to be, I think that counts.
I played it on the Forbidden Box, which sounds like a euphemism for a vagina. But
I haven't actually played the Burning Shores expansion, though, because I had a feeling that Forbidden West would eventually come to PC, so I thought, I'll wait, and then I'll do like a fresh playthrough that includes Burning Shores. And my patience has been rewarded, I feel.
It is good. I like it. She talks a lot in this one, does Aloy?
She talks
will
a lot.
Not story shut up.
It can't be as good, right?
There's not like the same degree of like mystery uncovering.
Right, yeah. There's no paradigm shifts, if you like. The same. That's actually what a paradigm shift is. Wicked, yeah. Always wanted
to use that phrase. Because in the first one, you're like, fuck's going on? Where have all these metal cows come from? Where, you know? And,
this isn't a caveman game.
Yeah, exactly.
this is an astronaut's game.
In the second one, you're gathering bits of a thinky computer into a golden lady. And it's a bit more like...
It's much trusting. Like being a hardware editor.
Lovely. That's one of my New Year's resolutions, actually, is to understand hardware more, because I got a new computer shipped to me last year, and when it arrived, a bunch of the bits had fallen out, and I had to send James like,
what's this bit?
Weird, like videos from inside the case that sort of had the air of like Blair Witch Project, because I had the lamp the light on. And then I put it back together, and I was like, oh, this is quite fun. I did not, though, have a static bracelet on, so it's probably...
Oh, no.
Did your hand burst?
No, it's my PC shit now. Yeah, that's what happens, isn't it? What about you, Nate? I'm curious what you're looking forward to, because your relationship with video games is you're mostly, I think, you have your favourites, and so you don't... It's sort of like with... Ghosts, you'll sometimes find something new and then mainline it for a few days, don't you?
Yeah, I'm like an anaconda. I'll swallow a tape here and then just fester on a sandbank for a couple of months while it goes down. The tape here, actually, I've had another bite of Path of Titans over the holiday, doing more dinosaurs, and it's got me back to the perennial hailstorm of disappointment that is... looking forward to new dinosaur games. There's some clickbaity YouTube video that gets recommended to me every December, which is always the top 10 upcoming dinosaur games. And it's a running joke to me to watch it every year and see the same games. There's so many dinosaur games that had some half-assed announced trailer like 5 years ago and are still in development hell. There is, however, an actual Jurassic Park survival game coming out, which is, there's been tons of janky fan-made ones because for some reason Universal just didn't seem to want a Jurassic Park game that did the most obvious thing a Jurassic Park game could do. But now they are doing that. It looks more sort of excitement-y than horror-y. And I suppose in my gruesome heart, I would quite like a proper Jurassic Park horror game, but you know, you can't point a T-Rex at someone and not horrify them a bit. So yeah, it should do for the goods.
Okay, all right, good. Is that, have you got anything else on your list?
Yeah, there's old Deep Rock Ronalds coming out sometime this quarter. Deep Rock Galactic Survivors. James will know.
I do know. It's very good from what I've played.
Is it imminent? Do you know?
Not particularly. I'd say like maybe second half of this year.
Oh, it said the Steam page says Q1, but when people start talking in queues, you know, it's
that's meaningless.
But you know, that'll be good when it happens. Civilization 7, isn't that being hooted and
hollered? Oh, I don't know. Actually, I'm not a Civ watcher. Let me just pause to look up. Because how are you feeling about the Civ series?
I was in love with Civ 5 well into the release of Civ 6. Sort of tried Civ 6 a bit, but it was kind of like the Age of Empires 4 effect, if we're doing effects this week. You know, you just realise that the series has peaked with an earlier iteration. So I'll be really interested to have a go at Civ 7. I always ritually have a go at a new Civ. Will this one stick? I don't need that time sink, so I'm hoping not.
Yeah, they did announce it was in development in February. I remember that now.
It won't be this year, so then, hopefully.
Could be this year, but may not, you know. Well, that's fun.
And I will say as well, it's not a game that's coming out as such, but last time we spoke, obviously, I was in the throes of young love with Rogue Trader. It carried on being very good in all the ways I liked it. However, I got stuck on a really silly bit of level design. And also, it was at the time where I was really working out how to cheese the combat too effectively. So I decided to use the getting stuck as a sign, and I'm going to sit and wait for them to do a few more months on it. And hopefully that will make me feel like a, you know, bemused and delighted idiot with the combat again. So
okay,
I'm looking forward to pretending it's new again in like autumn.
Do you know what may interest you? Not to play, but I know you liked watching playthroughs of this. There's a Frostpunk 2 is coming out.
Oh, I do like playing Frostpunk actually. And watching.
Oh, do you like it now?
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought at the time that we spoke about it when it was out, you were just watching playthroughs. But you've rolled up your sleeves. So.
I've only played it once, and all the sort of DLCs and expansions. I never thought it had great replayability. But weirdly, I have got a buzz from just subsequently watching people go through it. So yeah, always got time for Frostpunk. Definitely a sequel.
I sort of don't know how do you do, is ice, but more, like.
Well, I mean, the way of doing sequels is often, you know, to find a different flavour of the gimmick. I don't know, I haven't seen any trailers, but is it like the floor is lava now?
No, it's still the floor is ice, but the floor is lava would be good. You'd have to do the opposite, wouldn't you? You'd have to find ways of keeping cold. That would be fun.
Just a massive standing desk fan in the middle of a radial city.
Yeah.
People doing laps around the place because it's on auto-rotate.
Yeah.
Oh, do you remember the Chronicles of Riddick where Vin Diesel got stuck on the prison planet that was super hot half the day and super cold the other half?
Yeah. Oh, mate.
Open palms.
Open Palm Slam, indeed. I've got a few that I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to The Mermaid's Tongue, which also sounds like it could be a euphemism.
Or a really grim pub.
So it's... It's the sequel to Tangle Tower, which was a point-and-click sort of mystery, fun puzzle game. It was more of a detective game, I suppose, than a puzzle game, if that makes sense, because the puzzles were sort of quite easy to solve. But it had a really nice cast. I really loved the art style, loved the characters, and it was one of those games where I finished it and I was like, I want a sequel immediately. And I hadn't seen that there was one announced, but The Mermaid's Tongue is coming out this year. And I'm really stoked at the sequel. And I don't really know what the setting and stuff is. I think it might actually be like an underground, underwater hotel, even underground. But I'm really looking forward to that.
What if the setting
I'm
is
also sort That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Meet me down a mermaid's Custer. Tongue for a pint of XL Bully.
There's been, God. There's been a kind of increase in running a tavern sims, actually. Like, you run a tavern for adventurers who come in after their day of adventuring and stuff. Things like that. It's quite cool. Notionally looking forward to Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2, which it was announced that the Chinese Room taking over development of it. It was a weird, like, Hard Suit Labs seemed to have basically finished a lot of it, and then they all got fired from it, and Brian Mitsoda, the writer of the original, kind of got shit canned. Really weird whatever was happening with that, but, like, I guess big, you know, vampire RPG. This game called The English Haunting coming out, which is a really fun 1900s gothic point and click puzzle adventure, pixel art, lovely, where the premise is, and I feel like this is something that could happen to Nate, but like, this guy, he's a teacher. It's sort of like Victorian Ghostbusters, right? Because like, this guy was a teacher at a school with his friend, and they ran like the paranormal department, and then his friend does a crime, and the main character has like a day to prove ghosts exist or he'll be fired or something like that.
Which
I think is great. I think it's awesome as an idea, yeah. I'm cursed to look forward to Dragon Age. I don't think it'll be out this year, honestly, but it will be talked about in the summer.
Going back to the Bloodlines, Alice, is there a part of you that hopes it will never come out? And I don't mean that in a mean way at all. Like, for example, I think the first work conversation we ever had was about you tentatively looking forward to Vampire Masquerade Bloodlines 2.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just like my nostalgia and our entire interaction in this world has been overseen by the aegis of that game maybe coming out one day.
Yeah, it was funny because I saw the preview when it was revealed and they had some stuff and they had a lot of stuff locked in, and then I saw another gameplay preview thing and like, it seemed like they were quite far down the road, and then they've backed up quite a long way, and for reasons that no one fully understands, probably will never be public. Don't know what happened, but I don't know. I see what you mean. Yeah, because like, if it never comes out, then there's a possibility that someone else will do it again, and sort of just as a straight line from the start, and there won't be all this kind of remaking and drama and stuff. But I don't know. Like, it's funny because I love the Chinese Room's games, but I can't conceive of the Chinese Room making this game.
But,
so,
but does that not make it just like more, all the more interesting? I'm genuinely intrigued by, you know, this choice of developer. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but it is like,
no. I think my fear is that it still has combat and stuff in it, which is a bit like, what? They don't do fights. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
I always get this feeling when a game's been in the cooker that long, where it's like remember when the Duke Nukem game that was never going to come out came out, but it was kind of like, you know, when the sailors hauled over the edge of the ship after being keel hauled twice. You're like, no, don't do it again. We don't want to see him. We know it's going to be a mess. You know, there's a sort of a trend to it.
I mean, speaking of, if one can sort of ironically look forward to a game, I am interested in seeing Skull and Bones which is Ubisoft's sort of more serious Sea of Thieves, which has been, I think I saw it when it was first playable at Gamescom, I think something like 7 years ago, like a long time ago, and it's been in development so long, and I don't know why they're still doing it. Like that, like, I don't know, someone working on it must have done like a devil's bargain with they've sold their souls that this game will come out or something.
Maybe they've done a deal with actual pirates in another universe and they now have to create the game to set them free. That'd be like, amazing.
I don't understand why it's still coming out, but it is, because they overhauled it several times and they showed off gameplay of it at a preview, like I think 2021 or maybe 2022, and everyone was like, this looks shit.
Are they maybe just hoping that Sea of Thieves will come to the end of its lifespan before it comes out?
I don't know. Well, no.
I actually suspect someone probably not actually working in the development studio saw Sea of Thieves gaining moderate popularity and were like,
yeah,
oh, we have to get some of that.
I guess that probably. But because everyone said the hands-off like preview gameplay looked terrible, they overhauled it again. So now it's coming out this year, and I'm just like, what is this game even going to be? Because initially it was just they took the pirate, you know, the ship combat from Assassin's Creed 3, and were like, we'll make this its own thing. And now what is it? I don't know. It's just Sea of Thieves without jokes, you know? So I'm sort of weirdly looking forward to that. And also there's a little game called Tiny Bookshop, which is about running a secondhand bookshop in a little caravan by the sea. And I like that idea. And I would like to see it. There's a chance it will become a sort of grind because you have to pick new books and all that kind of stuff and your stock and things. But I think it's very sweet. So I'm looking forward to that as well. And you can see other stuff. All the stuff the RPS Treehouse are looking forward to. We have our 75 most anticipated PC games. There's a lot of weird stuff from Alice O in there. She always puts good weird shit in her list. So check that out if you're interested in, and maybe, you know, find some things to put on your wish list. I will link to that in the show notes. And it's also on the website. But now let's talk about games that we are playing and they're out now, lads.
So, I actually jumped on a bandwagon.
Did you?
Yeah, a Lethal Company.
Oh, okay.
It's very good. It's got a vibe. I think I'm probably in quite a small minority of people who's really intrigued by the world behind it. It's an extremely creepy bit of sci-fi. And it's also very good for laughing as people roar into microphones. The proximity voice chat is just always a winner. Have you played either of you?
No.
I haven't, no. Am I right in thinking it's kind of like Phasmophobia, sort of, but with more cryptids?
So that's what I thought. It's kind of like, imagine a really sort of busted No Man's Sky vibe with procedurally generated moons that you land on. You're looking for hairdryers and, you know, bits of string and useless scrap in these sort of big, horrible liminal warehouses. And there's all sorts of incomprehensible monsters, which are kind of Phasmophobia. But yeah, there's a lot of emergent fun in it.
Okay.
Yeah, there's, you know, a lot of combination of, you know, odd things with weird effects happening at the same time. And yeah, I don't know what longevity it will have. But yeah, it was a rare event where I did just give something a go because I kept hearing about it. And it is worth it.
Can you play it with randoms? Or is it the kind of thing where you need to have friends and stuff?
I've only played it with people I know, but I think it would work brilliantly with randoms because you are just four chumps in a space bin lorry. So, you know, there's there's a lot of times where you only realise someone has died when you get back to the ship and realise you haven't heard from them for 10 minutes. So yeah, it's very good.
Okay, all right, fun. That's good. James, what have you been playing?
So besides the usual stuff, you know, Dark Tides and Deep Rocks, I've been playing a demo of an upcoming sci-fi racing game called XF Extreme Formula, which is...
That sounds like an energy drink made by a YouTuber.
it's inspired by the F-Zero racing games from on Nintendo thingies. So, you know, like hovering spaceship-looking cars, boost pads, tracks that go upside down and do loop-de-loops and all that jazz. So I've never actually played an F-Zero game. I initially thought, oh, this is a bit like Wipeout, and have since learned that if you compare F-Zero to Wipeout, then certain fans of each will get quite cross with you.
Which one came first?
I want to say F-Zero.
don't know. We'll get emails.
It's not really like Wipeout. There are no like guns or power-ups or anything. It is pure speed and reflexes, kind of, because you are going around these very twisty, you know, physics-defying maps at thousands of kilometers an hour. It's very fun. I actually got into it because I was thinking about Resistor.
You just love stuff whizzing about, don't you?
I do. I just wanted to like go fast in a game. This actually does have a similar like spinny donut move to Resistor. I don't know if that was originally like an F-Zero thing.
This year, I will only be playing games with
which you can
aggressive donut.
James contains multitudes, man.
No.
Family is everything. Vin Diesel out.
it's very fun, although I've noticed that the AI of the other cars appears to be tuned to revolve entirely around what you, the player, are doing and how you're performing, which is a bit of a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, like, you can never build up enough of a lead that you just sit back and get bored. Like, there will always be the risk of you gently nudge a side barrier, lose like 5 kilometers an hour, and then 30 cars all rubber band straight past you. So it's good for keeping things like interesting on the lower difficulties, which is why you usually play. On the other hand, I'm fairly sure that it's possible for the AI to like take pity on you when you do really badly, which can lead to some strange behavior. So on one track, I just completely like went off the sides like Mario Kart style, had to restart like further back, which absolutely killed any and all hopes of finishing well. Like, everyone else just disappeared far ahead of me over the horizon, with no hope whatsoever of catching them. So I was just like trundling along for about 80% of the race, and then as I finally went down the last straight, I swear there are about 5 cars just like dawdling a little bit before the finish line, so that I could just speed past them and not have to finish last, which is very nice of them.
But does
show that when, you know, the AI is designed to, I guess, stick as close to you as possible, it is possible to break it if you get too far behind.
That is quite eerie, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Is it spelled with no E? Is it extreme?
Oh, no, there is an E. It's not that.
It's an E.
It's not that extreme. Like, it's not. If it were an energy drink being promoted by, I don't know, God, I can't even think of any gaming YouTubers. Themselves.
Who's a YouTuber?
I'm so out of touch. Mr. Beast.
He's only got like 20 energy drinks. He's got instant blood.
And a burger.
He has energy drinks for every letter of the alphabet.
Okay, lovely. I have been playing a... two-type point-and-click puzzle adventure called Twilight Oracle. It's very, like, old-school vibes. You play a kind of cool student from, like, a magic school, and it starts with, you know, the headmaster being like, you're failing every class and you're shit, so your last chance is to do this really dangerous mission. And they send you out with like three other failing students to this world that has like
Ofsted not familiar with the school.
No, indeed. But you have to, and each of the students that you're with, you each have a different power. So the character you play as can breathe underwater, so you can go underwater and talk to a giant multicolored squid. It's great. And one of them can like conjure fire, and one of them can read creatures' minds. So you bring back a lobster from under the sea, and she talks to it. And another one can control wind, so it's, you know, a bit elemental like that. And you go around, you do, your mission is to, you know, like save world, find artifact, and you go through magic portals to different worlds, and there's one that's all sweets and it's all like giant ice creams and giant marshmallows and stuff, which is a massive cake, which is cool. And there's a space war. It's really like, I love the art style of it. It uses a lot of like just the clashing colors and stuff. It's very Legends of Kyrandia, if anyone listening knows that kind of vibe. So it's not a review. This isn't a review, I would say, because the review embargo is the 30th, but I am allowed to talk about it, and I have been enjoying it. There you go.
What's the best sea animal in it, other than the big squid and the talking lobster?
The lobster's pretty... there's a snail. There's a talking snail who's pretty cool, and there's a mermaid. And there are just fish floating about as well. It's pretty good. And crabs. And starfish. Yeah, so that was fun. And I've also been playing the Nancy Drew video games for a column on RPS. Done the second one. Not as good as the first one, for anyone following along. And I'm now starting on the third one. So the first is still my favourite.
Are these like officially licensed?
They are, yeah. Drew. Yeah. There are 30-something of them. So
oh, Jesus.
I have a long road ahead. And these ones are all from like 98 and like 2001. So I have to do a bit of fiddling around sometimes and like mounting the files in different places to get them to work because of hardware and such, I guess. James.
yes, it's actually currently CES 2024 at the moment. That's the Consumer Electronics Show, which is arguably the closest thing that gaming hardware has to an E3, God rest its soul.
So... oh yeah, RIP, RIP. Yeah.
So there's been like a load of new gaming laptops being announced. AMD has a new mid-range graphics card in the Radeon RX 7600 XT. Nvidia actually has three new graphics cards coming out, which are the refreshed super versions of the RTX 4070, 4070 Ti, and the 4080. But what I found most interesting is the MSI Claw, which is MSI's version of a... I know. Is it MSI's version of a Steam Deck-esque, like, the Windows-powered handheld
I
PC?
I saw the post you did, and I...
Yeah, so first off...
The name Claw is so good.
Love the name. Like, the full name is the MSI Claw, but even their own press release just calls it the Claw. Which makes it sound like a 1950s radio show vigilante or something.
Claw is just one of those words that attracts the definite article. Like, it'd be rude not to.
The Claw, yeah. On an actual nerdy note, this is the first handheld gaming PC to use one of, well, like post Steam Deck that uses one of Intel's Core Ultra CPUs. These were announced last year, and they weren't necessarily made with these kinds of devices in mind, but they are promising like big improvements in graphics power over the previous Intel integrated graphics. So that'll be interesting. It's basically like a laptop chip that they've bunged inside a handheld. But it'll be interesting, okay. I think, because now we have like a real Intel versus AMD arms race going on, like we did in 2017. Or might not. If it turns out to be rubbish, like I haven't tested the chip in question, but MSI say it will run like AAA games just like AMD's mobile chips can. So we'll see.
Can you do a beans metaphor here, or is it? I mean, it's actually quite simple. It's just like Heinz and Daddy's slugging it out with beans.
Do Daddy's make beans?
I believe they do. Yeah, but only for fathers. I enjoy a single golden spoonful of them each day.
The only time I ever had daddy's ketchup as a kid was when I went to like my grandparents' house. So I kind of associate daddy's with it. It's kind of like an old person's brand. Like,
same, absolutely same.
Like Werther's Originals.
Yeah.
I never had this ketchup you speak of, and I think you're making it up to gaslight me.
This isn't snake school, mate.
Don't fucking start with that snake school shit.
if I could indulge in a bit of like proper hardware anorakism,
please.
I am a little concerned about the power draw of this Intel chip because, as I said, like it's mainly intended for laptops, which can have much bigger batteries, and its base power consumption, like the minimum it can use, is a lot higher than what you get from like the chips inside a Steam Deck or an Asus ROG Ally. And the Claw does have like a higher battery capacity than these, like including that of the Steam Deck OLED, which specifically went for a bigger battery. But still, it is meant to be a portable machine, and it's no good having all this power and all these process cores if it's just going to run dry in like 30 minutes, you know?
Finally, a real power claw.
The same reason you wouldn't put like a 2-liter fuel tank on a tractor or a Challenger 2 battle tank or something.
You don't know me.
Or like a tiny shallow nose bag full of baked beans for a cowboy's horse.
That's a good one.
A nose bag? Oh, imagine how wet that bag would be.
Don't stare too long into the beans metaphors, or the beans metaphors will stare back into you.
It would dry out in the sun, so you get this kind of like bean pate.
Oh, like refried beans, but real slow. Ask not cooked. For who the bean tolls, it tolls for thee. Okay, well, I'm not a fan. I am a fan of the name The Claw, but not like it makes it sound uncomfortable to hold, you know? So I don't know about that. Lovely. I like you getting excited about hardware, James. Thank you very much. Let's now get excited about whatever Nate's got planned. Who knows?
Well, actually, this has worked out rather well because we did skip me on the what I've been playing, but all I wanted to do was tell a silly anecdote about a tyrannosaur.
I'm very sorry that I skipped Nate. I apologise.
Well, no, because from the horns of being ill prepared and not having a tower has come a great banquet here. That's not all even right. An idiom. But yeah, basically, I'm going to tell you a little story. We'll have a bit of story time.
Okay. All right, but I'm going to flip the table on you, and if this anecdote is not good, I will thumbs down and you will be killed.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair.
Okay, all right.
Oh, by the way, did you see the meat portrait of Joaquin Phoenix I did on New Year?
I did not, but...
go and look at it after the show. It goes for you too, listener.
And Russell Crowe.
Yeah, James just tweeted
Don't put yourself down, Nate. That was a great... charcuterie Russell Crowe.
But I digress. So, yeah, lovely bit of drama on the high seas of the late Cretaceous. I was being a tyrannosaur. They take ages to grow, about 6 hours. And every time someone kills you, you lose a bit of the progress. So, and everyone tries to kill you because you're a tyrannosaur, but you're only the size of a pony. So it was like an entire day wasted, basically. I finally had this bloody thing near to adulthood, but I was starving to death and there was no other players in sight to kill. There was no carcasses, and it was really annoying because I was going to starve and get bumped back down when a massive, horrible devil bird plunged out of the sky. It was a Hatzegopteryx for connoisseurs, which is basically like, imagine a small plane with an anvil for a face. And yeah, it saw that I was dehydrated and starving and started pecking away at me. But I managed to do a big bite, and it was the first... I'd been running away for hours and hours and hours, and finally I murdered something and it saved me from dying. And I, I sent the player a little message saying, thank you for attacking me. I was nearly dead, and they were really nice. Because weirdly, people who go on a dinosaur game to tear each other apart are really, really friendly. So yeah.
That's funny. That's funny that what you did essentially like what I imagine a lot of teenagers do in Call of Duty, which is like when they kill someone, they send their victim a message saying like "get good" or something. but with you, like, it was a genuine thanks.
Yeah, I'm very sorry you had to die, but yeah, that's, cheers, circle of life and all.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
solid 7 out of 10. I'd say.
I suppose it was a bit better than the Pan story.
Yeah, wow. James did set a Herculeanly low bar for me there, so thank you.
You
were the first man out of the trench.
You didn't feel the peril of having to replace the Pan without anyone noticing.
The listener won't hear this, but James really slowed down his Pan story by adding in an aside about him burning some tongs, which I'm going to cut.
But then I started
bedeviling him with questions about Teflon.
But the burning of the tongs was why we needed to replace the Pan. It's vital.
Immaterial. Because
vital backstory.
You'd already started saying we needed to get my dad a new Pan because his Pan was old. You didn't need to add in that
the new Pan was the one we fucked up, so we had to get like a second new Pan.
I understand that. I'm saying that it makes it a bad story.
This is like Phoenix Wright. Next week, we just have an hour-long prosecution of the Pan anecdote?
The new Pan is entirely cancelled out. It's a negative zero.
That's why it's unusual, because you don't normally buy someone two identical Pans as a gift.
That doesn't make it better!
I take that logic.
No, that is illogical, right?
The story is I just got my dad a new Pan.
No, you got him a new Pan, and then you had to fucking, Agent 47 Mission Impossible the Pan into his house. That's the interesting bit. Not that you bought two fucking Pans.
Well, no, because he accepted the first Pan.
That doesn't make it a good story. You self-edit. You're like a comedian. Comedians don't really have conversations with taxi drivers, for God's sake.
Okay, well, yeah, fine. I guess I'm going to delete 10% of my anecdote.
This is the schism that finally does for us. Alice, you were too quick to say season 3. Now Vampire the Bloody Masquerade 2 is going to come out.
Sorry, James.
Cats will chase dogs and birds will fly upside down.
No, it's fine. I don't actually give a fuck about my stupid Pan stories.
James invited me to his wedding yesterday, and this is how it repaid.
It's like that scene from The Godfather, only with James, all the variables changed.
Let me phrase it another way. I loved the image of you having to sneak a Pan into your dad's house, and I would have preferred the emphasis on that. Okay. Also, we just lie to the listener. They don't know us.
It was the best damn Pan story I've ever heard.
I think we should leave all of this in.
Yeah. Okay. Do you know what? I'm not going to cut any of it out. Okay. I take it back. I'm not going to cut any of the Pan story. And the listeners could be the judge.
And let's have a lot of time wasting, antagonizing public pressure campaigns and release an extended cut in a year.
Release the Archer cut. God, sorry, James.
It's okay.
That really does just about do it. Jesus, we have to end this. This episode of the Electronic Wireless Show, every week we recommend something that is not a video game or me being unnecessarily aggressive about honestly quite a sweet anecdote. In
it was
James's
the Tower
life.
Of Rage this week.
God. James, what are you recommending this week?
I'm recommending the album It Flew by the Electric Swing Circus. So one of my coping mechanisms whenever I have to work a Black Friday or a Prime Day is to just listen to electro swing playlists. because that style of music is not mad enough to distract me from work, but is lively enough to kind of keep my morale up.
I know exactly what you mean. There's a manic energy to it.
Yeah, so I'm recommending this album particularly because some of the songs on it have just endured in my head for the month and a half since I last had to deploy them as a coping mechanism. It's just so much fun and like multi-textured, multi-layered, and has like a really live sound to it, which you don't always get in studio recordings. So yeah, it's good. It's a good album.
Good. Okay, that's a lovely recommendation. Big fan of that. Okay, what about you, Nate? What are you recommending?
Well, obviously, apart from BBC sitcom Ghosts and its excellent companion book, I'm going to recommend an album too, because I think that's always a good shout.
What is it?
I have been listening to an album called From Voodoo to Zen by Tides from Nebula, which is, I'll admit, a very silly album name and a very silly band name, but it's an hour of absolutely beastly synth-heavy prog. Lots of what I'd call sort of euphoric dread. Big Necron energy. Love it. Yeah.
Necron energy. Okay.
Yeah, opens with a track called Ghost Horses, which really does sound like Ghost Horses.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, I am going to recommend... I don't know, actually. There's a couple of things I can recommend. Joe, I'm going to recommend the second series of the television show After Party, which not as good as the first, but still really fun. Has some really great episodes. Basically, a murder happens at an after party at a wedding, and then each witness or suspect tells their story, and then the episode is in that style. So there's like a kind of loser nerd who tells it as if he's a private detective like Philip Marlowe, and it goes all black and white, and the ratio, screen ratio is different, and he walks around and keeps offering people he's offering people bribes, but he says, I'll give you 4 slices of ham, because he calls $10 Hamiltons. Yeah, it's good. The first series is really, really good as well, if you haven't seen it. I think it's on Apple, I can't remember, but it's very good. So that's what I'm going to recommend. And I think that does it for this episode of the Electronic Wireless Show. We did. Thank you very much, Nate and James. Thank you, listener, for joining us at the start of the new year. Plenty more hijinks to come, I am sure. And for keeping up with Rock Paper Shotgun, you can find us on whatever social medias. We're on most of them. We might even be on Blue Sky. I can't remember. Facebook, YouTube, X, maybe even Instagram, maybe even TikTok. You can email us podcast@rockpapershotgun.com to defend James vociferously from my dastardly attacks. And for all of your video game needs, just go to www.rockpapershotgun.com. But for now, it's goodbye from me, Alice Bell. It's goodbye from Nick Crowley.
And it's goodbye from the Claw. Oh,
God. And goodbye from James.
Goodbye.
Bye, everyone. Bye.